Here we go, another episode of the Chief Stone Podcast. I'm Farzi Musugin, the host of the Chief Stone Podcast. Hope you guys are having a good week as the Chiefs continue to stay busy with free agent signings and a player that they are reportedly interested in, a former player in the AFC West, former Pro Bowler. We'll talk about that and much more on this episode of the podcast. Plus, we'll do our closing segments and a bit of an minor update on the Tyreek Hill story, but surprisingly, all the way through Tuesday evening, not a whole lot of news or updates from that situation. But I think even then, there is still something that we can kind of chew on from that topic and discuss here on the podcast. So we'll get into all of that and much more here on this episode. Again, follow me on social media. You guys know the drill. You've heard me say it many times. Facebook.com/FarzineVisugian. That is the Facebook page. Give it a like. Follow me on Facebook and on Twitter as well at Farzine21. And make sure you are subscribed to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and Podbean. And hit the share button as well. Share those links with your friends on social media. Gotta give a big thanks to everybody who shared the episode, the last episode which we had Lee Steinberg, Patrick Mahomes' agent. It was by far the most downloaded podcast we've ever had on this podcast. And I also shared the article on Arrowhead, or I wrote about the details on arrowheadaddict.com. I actually did two articles, one talking about his foundation that will be launching soon, sometime in a couple of weeks, which Lee told us. And I also wrote that Lee said that he wants to stay in Kansas City long term. I wanted the foundation story to be more viral because, you know, when you think of a foundation and he even calls it the Mahomies, I mean, that's pretty cool. But a lot of people shared it, but nowhere near to the point where people shared the other part where Lee said that he wants to stay in Kansas City for the rest of his career. And I thought, okay, well, that's kind of an obvious thing. Of course, an agent. And I got a lot of tweets. What do you expect his agent to say? Or why would you ask that? And all kinds of crazy criticism we got from that. So appreciate everyone who did share the articles. Lots of media outlets shared it. And I understand the Kansas City Star did not share it because in the podcast I did kind of criticize them because of some of the things that went on with their coverage of the Tyreek Hill situation. So they did not want to promote that into their website, which, hey, I understand. No hard feelings. Wasn't even expecting that in the first place. But special thanks to Stephanie. I'm going to butcher her last name. I believe that's Griflage. Hopefully I got one of those pronunciations there. She is the producer, one of the content producers for Fox 4 News in Kansas City. And she was the first to share the podcast link as well as the Arrowhead Addict article to Fox 4's website. And then a few other media outlets in Kansas City, Topeka and Wichita shared those links as well. So a big thanks to her for basically starting that trend and spreading the word. And that's really what helped spread the word about the podcast and the interview we had with Lee Steinberg. And of course, a big thanks to Lee for coming on a very busy week for NFL agents. I imagine you guys, there was that one week where I took a week off from the podcast. I actually thought I might have produced an episode that week because I was anticipating we would have had the Lee Steinberg interview that week, but not the case. But hey, we got it done one way or another, and I appreciate everyone over at Steinberg Sports, all the guys behind the scenes there who helped set up the interview there. So if you haven't heard it yet, a lot of great stuff. We talked about the foundation that Patrick Mahomes is working on. I also asked about his interest in staying in Kansas City long term. Also talked about the possibility of being the first potential $200 million quarterback in NFL history, also his public image, all the things that he has done in the community, all of that. And Lee shared a very interesting story that a couple of the media outlets pointed out. I did not expect this to get talked about, but it's funny when you do something or you tweet something, you don't know if it's going to, I mean, it may be funny to you, but you never know how everyone else thinks about it. I'll put something that I think is funny, but it'll only get a few retweets, and then I'll put something that I don't even think is funny at all, and the whole world is trying to share that post. But yeah, you don't have control of that stuff. I don't have control of that stuff. It's you guys who control that part. But he did share a story about Derek Thomas, kind of a brief story about Derek Thomas that I guess the local media liked hearing about that. I did not think that would have been the case as well. So a big thanks to everybody who did spread the word for that podcast. And again, never too late to share that interview. So if you guys got a chance, if you guys haven't heard it yet, go listen to the most recent episode of the podcast and check it out on there. With that said, we're going to move forward now, and the Chiefs have picked up a new cornerback in Bashaud Breeland. Yes, the same Bashaud Breeland last year. Before I get into Bashaud Breeland, real quickly, kind of funny how this all works out now, because the Kansas City Chiefs, if you remember last year, they were trying to reach out to and tried to sign Tyrann Mathieu and Bashaud Breeland, not at the same time, kind of happened at different times. I remember Tyrann Mathieu was during the free agency, right as soon as the free agency period opened up, and Bashaud Breeland, he visited the Chiefs during training camp, if I remember correctly, and it took him a while before he managed to jump on with the football team, and I'll get into that a little bit shortly. But two players, two defensive backs who the Chiefs wanted last year probably would have made a bit of a difference last year, if we're being honest. But better late than never, especially when you're revamping this defense and you've got a new defensive coaching staff. You got two new players in your secondary who you were trying to get last year, and you got them this year, and Tyrann Mathieu and Bashaud Breeland. And I think that really goes to show what kind of an effort Brett Veach is putting on just to try to get this football team back to where it was and do even better. You know, finishing, of course, in the AFC Championship game just an overtime period away. And look, I mean, so many things happened in that football game. The lack of points in the first half, the drops, the bad punt return from Tyreek Hill, the offsides from D4, the dropped interception by Eric Berry, 13 of 19, third downs allowed. And by the way, the Chiefs are trying to suggest a new rule. They're proposing a new rule so that both teams, regardless of if it's a touchdown or not, both teams have an opportunity to possess the football in overtime. And obviously, this has to do with in response to the fact that they had the league MVP, a guy who had 50 touchdowns, and 5,000 passing yards and didn't get a chance to touch the football in overtime. Look, I've given my thoughts on here. I don't think the coin toss is won or lost. Look at the New Orleans Saints. Obviously, their fans, they're going to ignore the fact that the Saints had a chance to win in overtime and they threw an interception. Plus, the penalty, the missed face mask call on Jared Goff. But they just want to talk about the penalty that was missed. Whereas, as Chiefs fans, look, I know there was that missed penalty that was called on Chris Jones for roughing the passer, which obviously was a horrible call. But, to me, it's like you're just looking for every excuse possible because you didn't make it to the Super Bowl. And to me, I think the Chiefs are really trying hard. They're really pushing a little too hard with these excuses here, saying that, hey, we should have had possession in overtime. And I mentioned, I mean, there were a plethora of things the Chiefs could have done to avoid that. I went over the list. Bill Simmons, and I don't know much about Bill Simmons. I see he's got a Red Sox picture on his Twitter profile. So I guess he's a Boston guy, a Patriots fan, I suppose. He wrote, the Chiefs formally proposed a, quote, we had a home field and choked in overtime and gave up three third and long conversions. Let's divert everyone's attention away from this, unquote, rule. And look, he's absolutely right. I know a lot of Chiefs fans saw that and they were not happy with his comment, but he's actually right. Look, even though the Patriots won the coin toss in overtime, I mean, listen, I've always liked sudden death. And before I get, and I promise I'll get into the Bashaud Breeland signing, but I've got to address this because we haven't talked about this yet. Everyone wants to say that, you know, in basketball, the first point, the first basket in does not win the game. Well, it's a completely different sport in basketball. In basketball, the defense can't score. In football, the defense does score. And a lot of people also compared it to baseball, saying, look, if a team scores on the top of the 10th, it wouldn't be fair to the defense. Well, again, the defense cannot score in baseball. So, and baseball is a completely different sport in the dynamic and the way teams score and play defense compared to other sports. So I think people are stretching quite a bit when they bring up the fact that in other sports, it'd be way too unfair if they had the same rule where it was sudden death. Whereas in the NFL, man, look, it is a completely different sport. You had 60 minutes of playtime and you had lots of, by the way, Stephen A. Smith made a really terrible in an erroneous comparison, saying, hey, look, would you like it if a team possessed the football for the entire first half? Well, first of all, unless something crazy is going on, and if there is a penalty being called every single play or every other play, it's impossible to possess the football for an entire half, even an entire quarter. We've seen long drives in the NFL before, but never a 50. I don't know what's the longest drive in NFL history. I know the Chiefs did have a 10-minute drive in week 2 against Denver on the road a couple of years ago. That was Cairo Santos, I believe, his first game as a Chief, where the Chiefs didn't even get any points off that in the 10-minute drive. So, listen, having possession to open things up, I mean, I like that. Listen, and if you're Kansas City, you should be in favor of a sudden death type of rule, because, let's be honest, if you win the coin toss in overtime, you're going to put both Tyreek Hill and Tremont Smith back as kick returners because you want to have the best chance possible to have one of your two speedsters get the football and take it all the way back more times than not. I know Smith did not have a kick return touchdown, but he had two big kick returns last season, one against the Patriots and the other against the Seahawks. Both were Sunday night games, by the way. And Tyreek Hill, I mean, his name speaks for himself at this point. Everyone knows that he's a dangerous guy once he touches the football, especially on special teams. I know his special teams numbers have not been as dominant, but still, I'll take my chances with Tyreek Hill more times than not. And look, if you get to the end zone to open up overtime, great. If not, then maybe your special teams unit can do a good job of setting you up with great field position. So you would think Chiefs fans would be maybe more. And let me just say this, because I got a lot of Chiefs fans complaining about this. And I said in response, look, if the Chiefs got possession and scored the touchdown on the first drive and won, no Chiefs fan would be talking about this rule. And I had a couple Chiefs fans saying that they would. No, you wouldn't. Come on. You'd be making Super Bowl plans. You'd be talking about 2 weeks from the date. So NFL fans, they love the rule, even if they think it's unfair, but they love it if it's in favor of them. But the moment it works against them, that's when NFL fans take issue with the rule. Look, the NFL has already done everything, it feels like, with the exception of giving both teams possession regardless. It feels like they've done everything to adjust the overtime rules, and people are still complaining about those overtime rules. And I'm just not going to get behind that. But I know we got a little off topic there, but that was a topic we did not really have a chance to really touch on. And I wanted to give my thoughts on that. Let me know your thoughts if you agree, disagree. I know a lot of you guys are probably going to disagree. But look, I put the list out there. There are plenty of reasons why the Chiefs lost that football game. The coin toss in overtime was by far the last reason. It's on the bottom of the list as to why the Chiefs lost that football game to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game. But back on track, Bashaud Breeland, I did promise to talk about him. Fourth round pick in 2014 by the Redskins out of Clemson. Played in Washington from 2014 through 2017 for 4 years. And despite being a fourth round pick, still played and started a lot of games with the Redskins. Last year was with the Green Bay Packers, his first time outside of Washington. In the 4 years he was in Washington, he only missed 4 games, a very active starter early in his career, despite being a fourth-round pick, as I mentioned. Played 7 games for Green Bay last year, and the reason for that is because he signed in late September, didn't play until week 9. They wanted to keep him sidelined. He was a healthy scratch for a lot of weeks. He was inactive quite a lot because they wanted to give him some time to learn the defensive playbook and to pretty much be prepared. Playing defensive back in the NFL is never an easy thing, and in college as well. It's one of the hardest positions to go from high school to college to the NFL. Very difficult to do for defensive backs, especially cornerbacks in specific, more times than safeties. And that is an area where, look, you're bringing a cornerback late in the season. And in this case, I mean, early September, no, that's still early in the year. But in terms of prepping and getting ready for the season, I mean, he had no knowledge of the defense in Green Bay, so they had to ease him into that starting role there. He did suffer a minor groin injury, missed a couple of games there, but managed to come back and finish the past couple of games with the Packers. He turned 27 in January, so still a very young football player, and reuniting with Kendall Fuller, too. Both were teammates in Washington for a couple of years. He had 10 picks in 5 years, two last year. He had a pick six this past season against the Falcons and a fumble recovery in the fourth quarter to help seal a win over Atlanta. Has 7 forced fumbles in his career, and those all came in the first 3 years of his career. He's got a one-year deal with the Chiefs with a max value of $5 million. He failed a physical around this time last year with the Panthers. That nullified a 3-year, $24 million contract with the Panthers, Carolina Panthers. Now, look at the quarterbacks you have on your football team right now. You've got Kendall Fuller, Bashaud Breeland, Tremont Smith, Charvarius Ward, and a couple of names you may not be familiar with, guys who may not make the football team, Step Durham and Demontre Wade. Let me just say this. I think, as of right now, looking at Fuller and Bashaud Breeland, I think those two are your starting cornerbacks, but there's probably somebody who the Chiefs are going to want to draft in the first round. I know a lot of people might be looking at edge rusher, but I think the Chiefs will go with a cornerback in the first round. You'll have Bashaud Breeland starting on one side and a rookie on the other, and Kendall Fuller can resume his duties as one of the best nickel cornerbacks in the NFL. And as far as Tremont Smith and Charvarius Ward goes, I think Tremont Smith is more better as a depth at cornerback. Maybe he comes in if the Chiefs want a heavy set with their secondary, maybe in the dime or quarter package, and that's when you may see Tremont Smith the most. I know he did start that game last year against Seattle. It didn't do very well. I think, really, Tremont Smith, the reason he got drafted was because of his abilities, more so as a kick returner than as a cornerback. So his work as a cornerback is still in progress, whereas with Charvarius Ward, saw a couple of good things from him. Didn't get a chance to see a whole lot of him in 2018. But keep in mind, the Chiefs did trade for him, acquiring him from the Dallas Cowboys. So he's a player who the Chiefs want to work with as well in 2019. So I think the quarterbacks you'll have in 2019 are going to be Kendall Fuller, a rookie, Bashaud Breeland, Charvarius Ward, and Tremont Smith. I think those are the guys who you're going to have at the cornerback position in 2019. So that is the free agent signing, Bashaud Breeland, now joining a position where there's a lot of turnover. Kendall Fuller's coming back, Tremont Smith's coming back, Charvarius Ward's coming back, but you did lose Steven Nelson to the Pittsburgh Steelers, although I don't know if that's a player who the Chiefs had a whole lot of interest in bringing back, especially given the contract that he ended up receiving. And Orlando Scandrick, not a good year for Orlando Scandrick, and the Chiefs let him walk as well. So here's a recap with free agency so far. The Chiefs have traded or released Dee Ford to the 49ers, and they cut Justin Houston and Eric Berry. They lost Mitch Morse to the Buffalo Bills. He's now the highest paid center in the NFL. But just mentioned Steven Nelson. He is now with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Kareem Hunt, before free agency, before the new league year, he signed with the Cleveland Browns. Still unsure about a couple of players out there who are free agents at the moment. Guys like Jeff Allen, Anthony Sherman, Jordan Devey, and Alan Bailey. I think Alan Bailey, he did some good things last year for that Chiefs front seven. And who knows exactly what his role would be in a 4-3 style defense. And maybe the Chiefs don't have interest in bringing him back. You look at the Chiefs front seven, I mean, they've really changed that front seven up. Chris Jones is the only guy back, along with Anthony Hitchens and Reggie Ragland. I don't think there are any other returning stars. I mean, you're gonna have Derek Nanny maybe in a new position. Xavier Williams is still on the team. We'll see what his role is. But, a lot of change on that defensive front right now as they make that transition to the 4-3 defense under new defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo. Now, before free agency got underway, the Chiefs did sign a couple of guys who you may be familiar with. EJ Manuel, who the Chiefs could have drafted in 2013. A lot of people thought Geno Smith would have been taken in the first round that year and that the Chiefs would have taken him, and the Chiefs passed because they got Alex Smith. And EJ Manuel ended up being the only quarterback taken in the first round, a shocker to a lot of people. And he did not do very well with the Buffalo Bills. Maybe he comes to Kansas City, and I think with his style of play as a quarterback, I think he'd do better under Andy Reid as a potential backup. But I also said the same thing for Terrell Pryor a few years back, if you remember. He was with the Chiefs, and the Chiefs ended up cutting him about a month or two after they had signed him. By the way, funny story about that. So the Chiefs did sign Terrell Pryor the week before the Super Bowl. And with EA Sports on Madden, because they stopped updating rosters right after the Super Bowl, Terrell Pryor stayed with the Chiefs if you were a Madden player in the offseason. So I would always substitute Alex Smith out and just use Terrell Pryor, and that was my Michael Vick in Madden. Because everyone loved using Michael Vick in Madden, but I always used Terrell Pryor. But again, I thought Terrell Pryor could have had a better opportunity in the NFL, maybe with the change of scenery, especially under Andy Reid, but obviously not the case. We'll see if EJ Manuel can not let that happen, not follow the footsteps of Terrell Pryor and manage to keep his job in Kansas City. So we'll see what happens with that. And they also signed Sammy Coates, a wide receiver who some may remember. So those are guys who they signed before free agency. As soon as free agency got underway, the Chiefs did sign running back Carlos Hyde, safety Tyrann Mathieu, outside linebacker Damian Wilson, and defensive end Alex Okafor, as well as Bashaud Breeland, who we just talked about. So, and by the way, Wilson and Okafor are both, Wilson was an outside linebacker in a 4-3 system. Alex Okafor was a 4-3 defensive end in New Orleans. Wilson with the Dallas Cowboys and reuniting with Anthony Hitchens. So this Chiefs team, they're doing a lot of work defensively, trying to bring in guys that fit the 4-3 style scheme. And I'm sure they're going to draft a lot of guys this year in about a month, guys who have experience playing in the 4-3, because that's what they're transitioning into under Steve Spagnuolo. So that is going to be essential for the Chiefs in the draft this year, and they're already getting a head start bringing in guys who fit that scheme on this defense. And again, they got two defensive backs, one cornerback, one safety, and Mathieu and Breeland, who they wanted last year, did not get them, but got them this year. And look, I think this is a good year to get them, because you're trying to make that change on defense. And again, maybe if you had them last year, one or two things could change, maybe in that Rams game, maybe in that Patriots game, or both Patriots games, rather. So hopefully the Chiefs can keep working in that area and try to improve with their secondary as well. A lot of improvements on this defense. 2 years ago, this defense was one of the best. They had Pro Bowlers at the defensive line, at linebacker, and in the secondary. And now, with Dontari Poe moving on, Justin Houston, Tom Bahali, Dee Ford all gone, Eric Berry no longer on the team, Marcus Peters no longer on the team, Derek Johnson no longer on the team. So many great players on this defense have moved on, and it's crazy how much this defense has flipped from being one of the best, one of the more dominant defenses, and getting turnovers and getting a lot of yard stuff. I know they allowed a lot of yards, but when it mattered the most, man, that red zone defense really came through. And the moment the offense started playing well, if you remember last season with Alex Smith, that's also when the defense started to decline heavily. So kind of crazy how that all worked out. Hopefully the Chiefs can find that balance with their defense and their offense in 2019. Maybe not an exact balance. I still think the offense is going to be way better than the defense. But man, even if this defense finishes in the top 20, and assuming this offense continues to do its thing, you would think that being a top 20 defense would be more than enough to improve, at the very least improve from finishing at the AFC Championship game to moving on to the Super Bowl. Who knows? That remains to be seen. Every year is different. Every situation is different. Hopefully the Chiefs can continue to make those improvements on the defensive side of the football. Now let's go to the offensive side. I know we talked about Carlos Hyde a little bit, the running back who they brought in. By the way, I did not mention this. Running back Spencer Ware, he is visiting the Lions. Safety Eric Berry visited the Dallas Cowboys, and reports are that he will be visiting other teams. Those teams have not been listed yet. But as far as offense goes, the Chiefs are taking a look at a wide receiver who many of you are familiar with. The Chiefs are one of five teams interested in wide receiver Jordy Nelson. Yes, the same Jordy Nelson who was drafted out of Kansas State. The Titans, Seahawks, Patriots, not the Packers. He is a former Packer, but I meant to say Patriots. And surprisingly, the Raiders, the team that cut Jordy Nelson, these are the five teams interested in him. The Raiders are interested in him, but they want him at a much cheaper price. And we'll go over this because I've seen a lot of mixed opinions, a lot of people disagreeing with me that Jordy Nelson should come to KC. So here's my case for Jordy Nelson. Quick background on him, early second-round pick from Kansas State in 2008. And if you remember that year, that was the same year the Chiefs took Glenn Dorsey and Brandon Albert in the first round. No wide receiver was taken in the first round that year. However, Jordy Nelson was the first wide receiver drafted in 2008. Although I don't know if that'll ever happen again. A wide receiver not taken in the first round, especially in this pass-heavy era in the NFL. That's the last time, I believe, that has happened. 12 years in the NFL, spent 11 of them in Green Bay last year in Oakland. Fifth all-time in Packers history in receiving yards with 7,848. He is behind Donald Driver, James Lofton, Sterling Sharp, and Don Hutson. And just ahead of Boyd Dowler, going way back, Boyd Dowler, Antonio Freeman, and Greg Jennings. Second all-time in Packers history in touchdown catches with 69 behind Don Hutson's 99. As far as K-State history goes, third in receiving yards behind Tyler Lockett and Kevin Lockett. Tyler had 3,710 yards. Kevin had 3,032 yards. The only two players in K-State history with more than 3,000 receiving yards in their time as a Wildcat. And their last name is Lockett. So got to have your last name be Lockett if you want a 3,000-yard career in your college campaign with the Wildcats. Jordy Nelson, third on that list, as I mentioned, 2,822 yards. Jordy Nelson also fourth all-time in touchdown catches in K-State history behind the Lockett family and behind Quincy Morgan. He had 20. Jordy Nelson had 20. By the way, Quincy Morgan, if you guys remember, he only played 2 years at K-State, by the way. It was a transfer. And by the way, keep in mind, before I move on, the Lockett family, the reason that they have higher numbers than Jordy Nelson, that's because they played all 4 years. Jordy Nelson only played 3 years at K-State. So a very important thing to keep in mind when you look at those K-State history numbers. By the way, I mentioned Quincy Morgan. He had 9 receptions for 151 yards and 2 touchdowns in the 2002 season opener for the Cleveland Browns against the Kansas City Chiefs. And yes, that is the same game where Dwayne Rudd, the defensive, I don't know what his position was, defensive end, defensive tackle, a linebacker, whatever he was, he thought the play was over. He thought Trent Green was sacked, and so he threw his helmet in celebration, having no idea that the Chiefs were still playing. The ball was still alive. And that penalty helped the Chiefs get in field goal range, and the Chiefs stole one in Cleveland. And I remember the Cleveland headline the next morning read, "Down the Dwayne." Man, I know there's a former player in Kansas City named Dwayne. I feel like the Kansas City Star could have used that headline maybe once or twice against Indianapolis, if you remember that game in 2010. But no, that is the headline they went with in Cleveland after Dwayne Rudd screwed that up for the Browns. But yes, Quincy Morgan did have a big game against the Chiefs back then, so that's probably a name familiar to you for many reasons. If you're a K-State fan, if you follow Big 12 football, and if you remember that game very well between the Chiefs and the Browns in 2002. But look, I think Jordy Nelson would be a very cheap player. I don't think he's a guy that is in position to demand a lot. Maybe $2-4 million player on a 1 year deal. He'd be a great slot receiver behind Tyreek Hill and Sammy Watkins. And I think under Andy Reid, like I say this about every player that could play for Andy Reid, I think he'll bounce back. I think he'll rebound in his career. Played and started 16 games from 2013 all the way through 2016. And in 2017, he missed one game but was released after a huge step back. He had 482 yards, 53 catches, 6 touchdowns after a 2016 season where he had 97 grabs for 1,257 yards and 14 touchdowns. Obviously, a huge step back statistically. When you look at his 2017 season, he played 15 games, and in 2018 also played 15 games, had a couple of minor injuries that had slowed him down the past couple of years. He turns 34 in May, which is something to keep in mind. Look, I say sign him. Again, he won't be an expensive player. I think $3, $4 million, $5 million at the most on a one-year deal, and he'd make a great slot receiver at this point in his career. He'd be a big asset for Patrick Mahomes, and I think it would help even more this offense that had a historic season, third highest scoring offense in NFL history. And I think it would really help this Chiefs offense improve. Even though they were number one in the NFL, it's you're never too good to improve in sports or in life at all in general. So I think the Chiefs definitely need to make this move to keep this offense going. And look, you never know with injuries. Now, I will say this. There are a couple of people who are concerned about the interest in Jordy Nelson. I'm hearing some people, I don't listen to local radio a whole lot, but I did listen on Monday, and it really sounds like a lot of people are writing off Tyreek Hill and his time as a Chief. People are thinking that this news of the Chiefs being interested in Jordy Nelson has some sort of a connection to the Tyreek Hill incident in which the Chiefs might be looking for a replacement. And I cannot comment on that. You guys know me. I don't want to comment on things that I don't know much about. I know all we can do is speculate, and you've got to be very careful when you speculate on things like that. Look, I don't know if this is a move that the Chiefs are looking to replace Tyreek Hill. I know there were some rumblings about the Chiefs getting Antonio Brown and also Le'Veon Bell as guys who could maybe, obviously Le'Veon Bell would not replace Tyreek Hill position-wise, but as far as carrying the load on this offense, maybe taking some pressure off Patrick Mahomes without Tyreek Hill, people are thinking maybe that's why there were some rumblings. I don't know. Because teams always know about these kinds of stuff more times than not before we do. Now, I will say this. A lot of people in the media have, and I'm not talking about just ESPN, Fox Sports. I'm talking news outlets like CNN, CBS, Fox News, ABC. You get the idea at this point. A lot of them are talking about this Tyreek Hill situation. They've brought it up on their newscasts. And it's all about Hill's fiancée, Crystal Espinel, according to these reports here, had filed multiple reports where their three-year-old son was listed as the victim. The Kansas City Star reported on Monday they got confirmation from Overland Park Police that they are investigating two alleged incidents, including a reported battery at Tyreek Hill's home, and have forwarded a report to local prosecutor's office in Johnson County. Johnson County District Attorney Steve Howe said on Monday that the investigation is still ongoing and did not want to speak further on that. The Chiefs apparently confirmed to the Star that they were aware that the law enforcement is investigating, and that they did not confirm this part, but the Kansas City Star reported that the department and the Kansas Department for Children and Families told the Star that they are investigating the incidents as well. So I guess at this point it is fair to call it a Tyreek Hill investigation, because Overland Park Police had confirmed that. Now, everyone's going on this police report here. Tyreek Hill was not charged. People are going off that too. Well, look, Kareem Hunt was not charged nor arrested either. But we all know what happened there. So look, I don't know what's going on with this incident. I will say this, and I said this on social media, and I said this on the podcast, because it seems like Tyreek Hill is being tied into being responsible for his three-year-old son's arm. And we saw the Snapchat videos that came out, and everyone said, what the heck, he appears to be just fine. And this was on a Thursday evening where the video was posted. And I said this multiple times. I said, look, this is a pretty serious accusation, and I'm sure the Chiefs and Drew Rosenhaus, Tyreek Hill's agent, I'm sure one of them or both of them have told Tyreek Hill, do not post anything on social media right now. Nothing on Snapchat, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever. Don't do anything. I'm sure those suggestions were made. With that said, I said that, look, if Tyreek Hill does not have any responsibility in his son's three-year-old son's arm being broken, something needs to be released right now, either from his agent or from the Chiefs or all three of them in some sort of a joint statement saying, look, his son is fine. Because that's one thing if there's a report about a player, but when you include the player's family, and remember the whole Alex Reamer situation with Tom Brady's daughter being involved, and that created a big uproar because why are you attacking Tom Brady's kid? That was a huge story. And Terrence Paylor, I remember he was asked if he believed in Justin Houston when he was looking for a new contract. He did not show up to the 101 awards because he wanted a new contract. At least that was expected. But then the excuse was he had family emergency, and Terrence said, hey, look, speculate all you want, but when a guy brings in his family, you got to be very careful about accusing him of lying with that kind of thing. So, and I think that's a very fair point to make. With that said, I said before that if his son is okay, if his three-year-old son is okay, doesn't have a broken arm, as it appears to be the case in that Snapchat video, why have the Chiefs not said anything? Why has his agent not said anything? Why is Tyreek Hill not saying anything? Okay, I get it. Tyreek Hill probably not the best person for this. There's a reason why he has an agent and a team, and teams have a PR department because of things like this. But the fact that it is Wednesday and we have not heard anything about this, this concerns me a little bit. Again, I hate to speculate, but the fact that they have not, at the very least, cleared this three-year-old boy from the news, that something tells me that something is up. Something did happen, and maybe Tyreek Hill did have some responsibility in this. I hope I'm wrong in this, and I know everyone's going to say, let the facts play out. Okay, yes, I agree. We got to let the facts play out. However, we got this news on Friday, what, mid-afternoon? And I mentioned this too. That was exactly the time I was recording the Lee Steinberg interview. And the moment he mentioned that Patrick Mahomes had a great situation with Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, that is the exact second I found out about this, which was horrible timing. But, man, why have we not heard anything else up to this point? At the very least, don't you, like, just think, and I don't care how much experience you have in law enforcement or investigations, let's just think logically for a moment. Don't you think by this point, there should have been at least some sort of a statement clearing his son from all this talk with the media? And look, in social media, you know it's going to be 10 times worse. They haven't. Something tells me that there may be some bad news on the way. How much bad news? I mean, is it severe? How much responsibility does Tyreek Hill have? I don't know. And I know there are going to be a lot of people saying, wait for the facts. But at this point, I don't think anyone can deny the fact that because that nothing has been said at this point, it is kind of a concern right now. I don't know how long this is going to go on for. We thought we were done with the Kareem Hunt story. And then the video surfaced, what, 9-10 months after the fact that happened? I mean, we got it on the last day of November, if I remember correctly. Last day of November, and that happened in February. So, I mean, listen, man, if someone shot video of whatever happened, whether it was in the driveway or maybe you could see it through their window in their home, I don't know. It's going to create a big uproar and everyone's going to say, hey, look, when video came out, this did happen. You did release Kareem Hunt. And I know it was because more so with him not telling the truth, but the video coming out is what revealed that he lied. So I don't know, man. I just hoped Tyreek Hill is telling the truth to the Chiefs right now. And man, I know at this point people are just hoping that anything being reported is blown out of proportion, or maybe Tyreek Hill is completely clear from all of this. That's what people are hoping for at this point. But it does concern me that nothing's been said right now. Let me know your thoughts. Facebook.com/FarzineVesugian, Twitter.com/Farzine21. Real quickly, before we do our closing segments, Tamba Hali has posted some very concerning tweets here, and this was brought to my attention by a listener, Aubrey, so I appreciate him letting me know. He tweeted me, see, he said, hey, look, go look at Tom Bahali's Twitter. I said, why? He was tweeting a lot. Apparently, someone's after him. So here's what he did. He kept sharing screen grabs of his security camera footage. Someone is flashing a light at his home. It looks like the headlight of a car, but the way it's been flashing at his house looks a little weird, I will admit. But then Tamba Hali went on about something about a god from Egypt visiting his neighborhood and wants to attack him. Here's the quote. He said, I'm okay, but people are scared around this neighborhood. They are using false gods to attack my family every night. That is very interesting, and that's very concerning. Listen, I have seen Tambahali post things related to issues in his personal life before and then deleted them. And don't forget, he randomly, out of the blue, right before the 2017 training camp got underway for the Chiefs, ranted about the playoff loss against the Steelers. And again, no one knew where that came from. That was just, what, 6-7 months after the game. Obviously a heartbreaking loss, and he just kind of went off out of the blue with that. Not sure what's going on with Tambahali. I know he didn't play football last year. I don't know if it's because he had interest or if no one was interested in him. I just hope someone close to him is aware of all this and they're reaching out, trying to find help for him or trying to help him some way or another. Look, I don't follow too many players on social media, but I do know that Tambahali tweets a lot of things, and he'll say his personal, he'll say personal things on there, and sometimes he deletes them. But apparently, it seems like this has gotten worse and worse, and Monday night was something that scared a lot of Chiefs fans. And I will say this too, so back when social media was not as big, I added a few Chiefs players at the time on Facebook, and one of the players who I did add was Jovan Belcher, which he accepted. And I remember Jovan Belcher wrote a status post, and forgive me, I may be misquoting this, but basically saying the five-letter B word and saying that B word is going to pay. And this was just weeks, maybe months away from what did happen in that incident with Jovan Belcher. So look, I don't know what's going on in Tambahali's personal life. He says he loves his daughters and is enjoying life with them, which is good. But I don't know. A lot of people are bringing up CTE. And I don't know if you can really detect. I know Larry Johnson thinks he has it, but there's no way of knowing until a person is deceased if they have CTE or not. At least that's what research has proven so far. And it's a very tough topic to research, but man, I really hope someone from the NFL Players Association, I hope someone's aware of this and they're reaching out to give him help. Because these kinds of things should never be taken lightly, not one bit. And certainly one of those things where you got to make sure that he's okay. And whatever he's tweeting, could it be maybe just saying things kind of crazy? Okay, but at least it's good to double check than not. Last thing I do want to touch on before we go to our closing segments, I do want to go back to the Tyreek Hill story because lots of people have been criticizing Brooke Pryor. And let me just say this. And I did this too last podcast, so that's okay. If you want to criticize Brooke Pryor and you want her fired because you don't think she's a good reporter, you know what? That is fair game, okay? We want head coaches fired. We want there was a certain defensive coordinator out there we wanted fired. We want players to be traded or cut, okay? I think people in the media have to be open to criticism for the same thing. And I'll say it for myself. I've said it for myself many times. I criticize players and coaches on this podcast. So I can't get too offended if people criticize me if they think I'm being unfair about a certain subject. With that said, there are a lot of people out there who are unhappy about Brooke Pryor's reporting with the Tyreek Hill story, and people have been making some comments that are completely uncalled for, whether it has to do with her weight or the fact that she's a female reporter, and there are people out there who have been making sexually explicit comments about her. And look, I can't imagine what it's like being a woman in sports media today, or in sports in general. I mean, they're taking a lot of flack. The moment a female reporter is trying to basically cover a sport like a male would, they get criticized. You know, what do you know? Stay in the kitchen. But and I'm sure Brooke has heard many of those over the years, as has any female reporter. I'm sure Jemele Hill, before she was let go by ESPN, I'm sure she heard a lot of things, especially when she was defending Kaepernick and speaking against some of the comments Donald Trump was making. So look, props to all the women out there who have a big platform, especially in sports media, because people like to talk down on them a lot. And these are people who just say these kinds of things behind their keyboard. By the way, a lot of people who are making fun of Brooke Pryor for her weight, I guarantee you a lot of those guys, at least one of them is obese themselves, and they're making that comment behind their keyboard or their tablet, whatever. I just think it's very uncalled for. And look, I think as a society, we have come a long ways, but we still have a lot of room for improvement. And this is a great example of it. And again, if you want to criticize her for her job that she's doing, fine, that is fair game. But if you are criticizing her and making these kinds of derogatory terms about Brooke Pryor, not only should you be ashamed of yourself, any woman in your life, whether it's your wife, girlfriend, mom, sister, aunt, grandma, female cousin, all of those people should be absolutely ashamed of you. And I'm hoping no one listening has been making these comments, because they're not right. If any of these comments were made about any important women in your life, you would definitely be offended by that, and you would want to do... You would feel pretty upset about that. So the fact that people are making these kinds of comments really did upset me, and I hated seeing these kinds of things. And man, I mean, look, I know some people have kids out there. I mean, what if any of you guys, as parents of daughters, what if your daughter wants to be a female reporter one day like Brooke Pryor? I mean, these are the kinds of things that you have to kind of worry about here, you know. And listen, I'm sure people in media, a lot of people in media, by the way, have grown thick skin once they see these things once or a few times. Same goes for me. But their family members probably take it harder than them. And that's another thing to keep in mind when you make these kinds of comments about other people. And I'm talking some really sick comments that have been made out there. I'm sure you can figure out in your mind, you know, what kind of comments have been made by this point with the way I've described them. But these kinds of things need to stop. And if you see anyone saying these kinds of things, don't be afraid. Tweet them. Tell them that's not right. And if I see it, I'll say it as well. I'll let that person know what they're saying is absolutely wrong and not okay. Because that needs to be brought down in our society. No room for that at all. There's enough negativity in the world, and some people are doing a great job of adding on to that. Yet, it feels like everybody keeps talking about how someone's too negative and whatnot. So, why don't we all work together and stop that negativity? Especially in an area where women absolutely are allowed to cover sports and cover them just like a man. Let's wrap the show up. Let's go around the NFL. Giants general manager David Gettleman, he made some headlines on Monday. He took a shot at a reporter saying that his report is a crock because that reporter was saying Eli Manning is overpaid. And he strongly disagreed with that. Now, let me just say this, and I don't want to get into the Eli Manning story, but more on the topic of being overpaid. What is overpaid in the NFL today? Because mediocre and below average players are making $3, $4, $5, some even $6 million a year. Some backup quarterbacks are making seven figures. Let's not forget Chase Daniel, former Mizzou Tiger, played in Kansas City for 3 years, and he made, what, $10 million, I think, on a three-year deal. Chad Henne, by the way, he is 10th on the team right now in cap number. He's the 10th highest paid Chief right now for 2019, and he's making just a little bit more than $4 million. I don't know what overpaid is. Steven Nelson is making $25.5 million on a three-year deal. Matt Cassel, he immediately got signed to a $63 million a year for 6 years. And people thought that was way too quick, and they're overpaying him. Yet, I think nowadays, a player of Cassel's caliber could earn a six-year deal worth up to $100 million. Jimmy Garoppolo has barely played in the NFL, and he got $127 million? On a five-year deal with the 49ers. I mean, everyone's getting paid. Everyone's hitting the bank. And if you're just smart with your money during the duration of your contract and afterwards, that's enough to retire. I mean, it really is. I mean, I'm sure these players are going to want to keep playing, but that's a lot of money these players are making. I don't know what overpaid is. I guess you could essentially say everybody's being overpaid now. I'm not exactly sure if there is such thing as an overpaid player in the NFL. We may feel like one player is making too much, like Eric Berry and Justin Houston, but as far as even active players go, even players who don't play well, their agents still find a way to help them land contracts worth millions of dollars. One player who landed a new home is Blake Bortles. He is going from Jacksonville to the Rams after being let go by the Jaguars and replacing him with Nick Foles. He goes on to the Rams. I'll tell you what, man. There was a point in time where Blake Bortles actually had some good numbers, threw a lot of interceptions, but a lot of touchdowns as well, and it helped that he had guys like Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson. Very good offense that, look, I feel like if he had just an average defense in Jacksonville, maybe that offense could have done even more, and maybe Jacksonville could have been a more competitive football team, but crazy how it all pans out sometimes. And look, maybe this is not the end of Blake Bortles as a starter. Obviously, he's not going to start over Jared Goff, provided that there's no injury there, but maybe spending some time as a backup could be a change of scenery. Just go out there in the preseason, play well, and whenever an opportunity comes, hey, go fill in for Jared Goff. But if not, hey, maybe you'll find an opportunity elsewhere when a team might be desperate for a quarterback. So that is one thing to keep in mind with Blake Bortles' career at the moment. Last thing I want to touch on, I talked about this a little bit, but not necessarily what it means from a football standpoint from the Browns. Kareem Hunt suspended 8 games by the NFL, won't be playing for the Browns until week 9 or week 10, depending when the Browns have their bye week. And listen, Browns fans concerned because he suspended 8 games? Why? You have Duke Johnson and Nick Chubb. And I saw a comment on social media. Someone wrote on Bleacher Report's comment section, it's not a bad thing to have a fresh running back in week 9 or week 10, again, depending on the bye week is. You have Odell Beckham Jr., you have Jarvis Landry, you have David Njoku, and you got the two running backs I mentioned in Duke Johnson and Nick Chubb. You've got a lot of good players on your offense right now. Kareem Hunt, and it may take a game or two before he starts getting the hot hand again, but once he comes back, that's going to provide a huge boost for the Cleveland Browns, who are, right now, it seems like they're the favorites to win the AFC North, and potentially a team that could challenge the Chiefs and the Patriots for the AFC Championship. I know that's a little early to say, but I don't think it's something, I don't think it's an out-of-line comment to make. The Browns are on the rise, and once Kareem Hunt returns to action, you got a fresh running back halfway through the season. That doesn't happen, and keep in mind, Kareem Hunt, before his release from the Chiefs, he was in the top 3 in the NFL in total yards from scrimmage. That's how big of a boost it'll provide for the Browns once he comes back. Let's go out of bounds. This is a little interesting. ESPN Baseball Insider Jeff Passan reported that Major League Baseball has suggested increasing salaries for minor league players. The Blue Jays made headlines with this when they said they would increase their minor league salaries pay by 50%, which even then, it's still egregious how low it is. Single A players in Major League, or Minor League Baseball, I should say, single A players make $12,000 a year. Triple A players make roughly $15,250 on average, according to ESPN. Now, the pay increase is something that has, quote, strong support from MLB owners, according to Jeff Passan. Another thing they're doing, by the way, they want to expand from 25 to 26-man rosters in 2020. So even then, minor league players will have a better chance of moving up and potentially getting more pay. Let me just say this. Baseball's a very tough sport for one reason. Obviously, it's an everyday sport. But here's the big thing. So many players get called up and down constantly. They go from single A to double A, double A to triple A, triple A to the major leagues, or they get sent back down and all. For baseball players to constantly have to move around, and look, I don't know what it's like, you know, if you're, I'll just use a Royals example. If you're Paulo Orlando, a guy who has won a World Series as a right fielder, but he has seen a lot of time in the minor leagues and in the majors switching back and forth. I don't know what Paulo Orlando's living situation is like, because he'll be in Kansas City for 2 weeks, and then he'll be in Omaha for a week, then back in Kansas City for a week, and then back in Omaha for 2 days, and back, and so on and so forth. You get the idea there. So I don't know what that's like, and I think Major League Baseball players do deserve a little bit more because of that kind of deal where they're constantly dealing with moving up and down on a consistent basis and not really having a stable home. That's a very tough thing that Major League Baseball player, or minor league baseball players, I should say, technically they're still pros, but in the minor league level, and that's a very tough thing that they have to deal with. And I think that is something that needs to be considered for these baseball players when you consider how much they are making as baseball players. I remember I had a class with someone in college, and he told me that a family member from his wife's side is a minor league baseball player for the Oakland Athletics. organization, and he has a part-time job at I can't remember what it was, a Home Depot or a Lowe's in the offseason, because playing minor league baseball hardly even pays the bills. I mean, a part-time worker at a fast food restaurant can make the same amount, which, again, not a dig at baseball or anything, or minor league baseball players, but that is a reality. That kind of salary, definitely not going to get through for anybody in this country, for sure. And a lot of these guys want to go back home, whether they're in South America or just south of the border of the U.S., they want to go home in the offseason, and even then it's not easy to pack up your bags and go. I mean, that's a pretty penny as well, so I think that needs to be considered for these players. Another thing Major League Baseball is considering, in 2020, pitchers must face a 3-batter minimum. Thank you for this, because I'm tired of managers subbing a pitcher for every at-bat in certain innings because, a lefty's coming up to battle. Let's make a call to the bullpen. Oh, now it's a righty. Now let's go back to the bullpen right away. I hate that. Look, you are a professional pitcher. I get the strategy in all this, but a professional pitcher should be able to face any batter, whether it's a righty, a lefty, or a switch hitter. You're meaning to tell me you don't have that much confidence to go up against a guy who's batting opposite of you, and you want to make that big of a call about it? I mean, a pitcher should be able to face any batter in pro sports, or pro baseball, I should say. I'm really glad Major League Baseball is making this rule. And by the way, Major League Baseball, great job the past couple of years of trying to improve on pace of play and reducing total play time in baseball games. Definitely something that will help improve pace of play is having a 3-batter minimum for every pitcher. I'm sure injuries is an exception for this, but that is something that is needed for the sport, because a pitcher should be able to face anyone, okay? I don't care what the batter is. Lefty, righty, switch, you gotta be able to face him. I just think so. By the way, NCAA tournament coming up. I know a lot of you guys are filling your brackets. I've said before, I'm not a big bracket guy or a fantasy guy. I may or may not do one, I don't know. But KU and K-State, both 4 seeds, surprisingly, in the NCAA tournament. K-State won the Big 12 in the regular season, but KU, despite all the struggles they have dealt with all year long, still a 4 seed, just like K-State. Both teams almost made it to the Final Four last year. KU did make it, but fell flat against Villanova. K-State 1 game away from that. But even if your team is not in the NCAA tournament, the first 48 to 96 hours of the tournament, pretty damn fun. Maybe the most fun in all of sports. The first 2 rounds, essentially, the rounds of 64 and 32, a lot of fun to watch on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. A lot of fun to watch. But let me say this. I say this every year, and I'll continue to say it every year. I know someone out there, and several people by that, what I'm saying, they're going to have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 brackets. And this is the same person who will brag if they have the correct champion in one of their gazillion brackets. Yes, you're a loser. Congratulations on getting that correction for whoever wins. No one cares, okay? No one cares that in your 6 different brackets that you had one of the champions. If you have 6 different predictions, I would hope that you have at least the correct champion in one of those 6. That's like me giving Shaquille O'Neal 6 free throws and saying, hey, sink one of them in. That's not impressive. Maybe by Shaquille O'Neal standards, okay, yeah, that's impressive. But that's not impressive to give someone 6 free throws and say, hey, make one of them. So if you're going to be one of those people that has multiple brackets, please do not brag about having the correct champion unless you have a perfect bracket by this point. I think that's really the only time I give a damn about another person's bracket, is if they're perfect by this point. I think we can all agree on that, right? Because let's be honest, that is not impressive the least bit to have 7 different predictions. Final segment of the show, let's throw some penalty flags. I'm sure you have all seen the video gone viral of the Australian Senator Fraser Anning reacting to the mass shooting in New Zealand. He was talking to the media in Australia, and Listen, politicians from Donald Trump to a couple of other Australian politicians, they're blaming the mass shooting on Muslim immigration, which I'm not going to get into that. I don't want to touch on that too much. But the criticism is some people are avoiding calling it a race-driven act. Well, Fraser Anning, this was his quote. He said, "It's going to be eventually accepted or expected that these kinds of things happen." And he's talking about mass shootings. And as soon as he said that, this 15-year-old kid standing behind him, kind of on the side behind his left shoulder, pulled out his phone to start recording, and then a second later has an egg and nails him in the head from behind with this egg. Anning turns around and hits the kid's phone and then throws a punch at the kid. Security, by the way, these security guards are dressed like average dudes. They immediately get between these two, take him down, they protect Anning, and they call for police to come over. I have a question. Why in the hell is a 15-year-old there, and why in the hell was he able to hit this politician with an egg? If this happened to Donald Trump, if this happened to any U.S. politician, or if this happened to any big figure in the U.S., if Andy Reid's doing a press conference and a 15-year-old with an egg got hit from hits Andy Reid from behind, or any public figure that's talking to the media in this kind of a forum, everyone in the United States would be complaining about this, and they would be talking about stricter security. How in the heck does a 15-year-old, mind you, have an egg in his pocket ready to assault a politician? Now, look, considering what this guy was saying, almost like he didn't want to have a solution for this kind of a thing, I think he kind of deserved it, if I'm being honest. But this something needs to be said for the fact that this is that this even happened, that a kid was able to assault a politician like this. I'm telling you, man, if this happened in the United States, there would be a massive outcry and people would be talking about security in this country. No way that could ever happen in the U.S. I mean, forget about the fact that he had an egg and hit the guy. Why is a 15-year-old just a couple of feet away from this politician? Where was this? It looks like it's in a closed area where the average person would not be able to come. It's a place where it's behind closed doors. Kind of like a Chiefs press conference room. I mean, the fans cannot just walk in there. You have to have go through security. You have to have some sort of a credential to even get to that point. So why is that kid there? That is a big concern of mine, for sure. But still funny nonetheless. So Conor McGregor was running around the streets of Boston for St. Patrick's Day, and I guess I don't know what it's like in Boston. I get it; they've got that Irish going on, especially with the Celtics. I get all that, but I guess Conor McGregor was impressed with Boston and how they celebrated St. Patrick's Day. So much so that in an interview he did with a Boston Bruins broadcaster, he wanted to call it St. Patrick's Week, and he wanted to share that with his home country of Ireland. Now, the Boston Bruins broadcaster, I have no idea who he is or what his name was, but not important. He introduced Conor McGregor as a UFC star and a former champion, and Conor McGregor interrupted him and said he is a double champion, referring to the fact that Conor once held the featherweight and the lightweight belts and never technically lost them and was stripped from them because he was inactive, because his wife's or his girlfriend's baby was born, and then he wanted to go pursue the fight with Floyd Mayweather. So he was inactive for almost 2 years in the UFC. He came back and lost to Khabib, first of all. Second of all, you never defended those belts. You never cared to. So you're not a double champ. You lost those belts. They were stripped from you. So you are not a double champ. And even if the UFC didn't want to strip you, you lost to Khabib in the lightweight title match. So you're not a double champ by any standard. So get off the high horse. Conor just wanted to destroy everyone in the division, get the title, and never defend it. Look, the point of being a champion in combat sports is to defend the belt and stay on top of your division for as long as you can. Conor McGregor has never been able to prove that. He lost to Nate Diaz. He lost to Floyd Mayweather. I know he avenged the Diaz loss, but that was by decision, not a finish. And he completely looked horrible against Khabib Nurmagomedov. So this guy, by all means, is no champion at this point. People have figured out Conor McGregor. So for him to interrupt the Bruins broadcaster and call him a double champ, come on, man. No one's buying that. So the CBS affiliate in Birmingham, Alabama, CBS 42, I guess is the best way to reference that station, they had a huge, egregious error on one of their graphics. Now, if you remember the Tom Brady known cheater, Chiron, right, leading up to the Super Bowl, that was an intentional graphic. This one was a mistake. If you're listening on your laptop, or if you're on your tablet or your phone, pull out your keyboard as you're listening to the story. So a headline ran on CBS 42 on TV, and it wrote, Auburn wins the SEX tournament. Obviously, that's basically spelling out that Auburn won a sex tournament. If you look at your keyboard, X and C are right next to each other. So somebody, probably last second, had to come up with this graphic. They didn't have any time to proofread it. As soon as he wrote letter T on tournament, he had to submit it, save it, and put it on air. And then he or she realized that they wrote that Auburn won the sex tournament. A lot of you guys had fun with this when I shared this on Facebook. Ross wrote, I need to apply to Auburn. Paula wrote, college tour requests from high school seniors just increased exponentially for Auburn. Look, there have been a lot of mistakes. I've seen this mistake a couple of times in hockey, where they meant to write someone took five shots, and instead of S-H-O-T-S, they accidentally put a different vowel instead of an O. So I've seen that a couple of times. But to say that a team won a sex tournament, that is a pretty embarrassing error. This is your backyard here. Right? This is your big team. There are worse errors that could have been made. I mean, this is one that I think even the news director can look back and be like, yeah, this happened at one point. It's funny and whatnot. But in the moment, man, these news directors, they go ape you-know-what over mistakes like that. But that is pretty funny. Auburn winning the SEX tournament. I know a lot of people ask me, what is an SEX tournament? What exactly goes on there? I don't know. And I'll let you guys discuss that among yourselves. Appreciate all of you guys who downloaded and listened to this episode of the Chief Zone podcast. Farzin Vesugin here. A big thanks again to all of you who shared the article as well as the podcast interview with Lee Steinberg. Never too late to go back and share it if you haven't even listened to it yet. Hey, go back and listen to that. And it's never too late to react to those kinds of topics. Let me know your thoughts. We already have a discussion going on Facebook and Twitter about the interview, about all of these topics we've discussed on this episode, and much more. It'll be a while before we have another episode. I am off on vacation this week and next week as well. The next time you'll hear another episode, that'll be on Friday the 29th. I'll still have some chances to post here and there, but if there is breaking news, I may not have Wi-Fi the entire time, so I may not have access to posting on Facebook and Twitter, so I may not be able to share right away, so be aware of that. But we will be back for another episode of the Chief Zone podcast on March the 29th. March the 29th. That is a Friday. And then we'll have another episode on April the 1st. That'll be a Monday. And I'm sure there will be more activity with Chiefs free agency. Maybe by then, on one of those two episodes that I just gave for the dates, maybe there will be another update with Tyreek Hill. Maybe not. We'll see what happens with that as we go on. Again, never too late to interact with me on any of these topics. Facebook.com/FarzinVesugin. Give it a like. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter as well, @Farzine21. And subscribe to the podcast. Share the links as well. And spread the word about the Chiefs Zone podcast with your friends. Again, a big thanks to all of you guys who did share that interview with Lee Steinberg. And a big thanks to you guys for downloading and listening to the episode. My name is Farzin Vesugin. I will talk to you guys in about a week and a half. So enjoy your weekend. Enjoy next week. I'll talk to you guys then.